Liberty's leave policy was tremendous. Having the ability to take 16 weeks off, fully paid to bond with my child, was an incredible experience.
At Liberty Mutual, you can find a career that supports you at every step, even baby steps. We offer up to 16 weeks parental leave for new moms and dads. And because not everyone's pathway to parenthood looks the same, we offer robust fertility, surrogacy, and adoption benefits too. Learn more at libertymutualcareers.com and pursue your tomorrow today.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 26th of May, 2020. On the podcast today, I have Sachin Oza, Co-Chief Executive Officer of Rhea Bold Resources. And Sachin points out why they've acquired a further 16.665% of the West Newton Field. Also on the podcast, John Clark, CEO of Gfinity, explains the creation of Gfinity Digital Media and new e-commerce program initiatives. Plus, Simon Potter, CEO of Bahamas Petroleum, discusses their drill rig contract and how it significantly reduced cost estimates. And I also have on Glenn Goodman, former ITV news business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, talks about his thoughts on the market and why he's sitting on the sidelines for now. Plus, as always, two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk and also check out our COVID-19 index right there. It's companies that should do well during this lockdown period, maybe the period when we're looking for a vaccine. There's companies in there that create those tests, antibody tests, antigen tests, and also companies in there looking to come up with a vaccine too. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Sachin Oza, Co-Chief Executive Officer of Rhea Bold Resources. RBD is the ticker there. Sachin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me, Justin.
Now, it's obviously, you're one of the people working over the bank holiday weekend. Good to see, because you've announced an acquisition of a further 16.665% in West Newton, which is quite significant, of course, and we'll discuss that in a bit. As always, though, Sachin, for people maybe not familiar with Rhea Bold, can you just explain, because, of course, it's not just West Newton you have. So just summarise the business, please.
Justin, and as a quick highlight of the strategy that we sometimes discuss when we come on the podcast, is really re-emphasizing what we've said in the past. Rhea Bold Resources is an upstream oil and gas company where we focus on pre-cash flow assets and with low technical risk. And the capital we provide really takes those projects to the point of value recognition through near-term drilling. The other key point to stress is that we really look for economically robust projects that can create value in any reasonable oil price scenario. And over the course of time, when we've executed that strategy, 9 wells have been drilled, 8 have been successful, 5 are on production, had been put on production. So we were generating cash flow. And as I said, they were able to do so even in quite a low oil price scenario that we've seen over the course of the last few weeks. Obviously, the rebound now has made things even more profitable than they were previously. But essentially, that is the strategy that we deploy. We have carried that out over the course of the last 3 years and across the entire portfolio, which includes California, 2 projects in the UK, including West Newton and Romania.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots going on there. But when I saw this RNS come up this morning, I thought, hey, they must think a lot of West Newton because you've upped your stake here in 16.665%. So obviously, you guys have studied it more than most. So explain, what's the strategy behind this then, Sachin?
So we'll start off with the strategy and then absolutely happy to touch on and remind people why we think this is such a great asset. So prior to this acquisition, Rhea Bold had an interest of approximately 39% in the field. By acquiring Humber's stake of 16.665%, that takes us to approximately 56% interest in the West Newton field, which is obviously a very, very meaningful interest. We did so at what we think is a very attractive valuation, where the consideration for the acquisition was £1.4 million in cash and 350 million Rhea Bold shares. In addition, the joint venture partnership can take this project now and move it forward in really an optimal way. And we have quite an exciting work program ahead of us. And just to remind listeners, that includes the testing of the A2 well, the drilling of the B1 well, and likely drilling of the B2 well. The exact timing of that, we'll have to see how that plays out, because that's more COVID-related than anything else. But as soon as we can get going, we will, which is just an indication of how robust we feel the economics of this project are, despite the currently low oil and gas prices. So that really kind of hopefully encompasses the strategy and thinking behind this. But then, Justin, as you said, we have obviously looked at this project and over the course of time increased our exposure to it. And just as a quick reminder as to the reason behind that, when we originally went into this project many months ago, it was primarily deemed to be a gas field. When we drilled the A2 well and realized that it was primarily an oil field, and bear in mind this had a base case oil in place number of 146 million barrels, we increased our exposure then and had always been looking to do so. Because that 146 million barrel oil in place number, we believe, can be extracted again at this highly economic value and is robust down to these low oil prices. And so because of the confluence of circumstances that arose, it was a really good opportunity to increase that exposure, capitalize on it, and create what we think will be value for our shareholders as we unlock the inherent value in the project over the course of the coming months through that work program.
Yeah, absolutely. And just give us you know, a timeline of events expected at West Newton over the next 3-6 months, if you could, Sachin.
Yeah, and Justin, it was, as I said, the A2 test program, the drilling of the B1 well and the drilling of the B2 well. Now, the reason the timelines are difficult to give any further color on, as I said, is really related and associated with COVID. The COVID situation, for instance, at the A2 test does make it difficult to have people on site and indeed move kit to site, given various restrictions of movement. And additionally, that would be true for the drilling of the B1 well. But in the interim, what we are doing is having site prep work carried out for the B1 well in anticipation of guidelines being lifted to the point that we are able to carry out the work program effectively and safely, and likewise for the B2 well. Now, clearly what's been coming from the government is an easing of various restrictions in terms of movement. And in the course of time, we will be able to lay out what that program looks like whilst adhering to government guidelines. But giving any more color on that right now, Justin's a bit difficult, as I said, because the clarity just isn't there. We are working towards that. And as and when we can, we will provide more color on that. But just to say again, we are good to go from a funding point of view. We believe inherently in the robustness of the project from an economic point of view. And as soon as we can get to work, we shall, in those three pieces that I highlighted as part of the activity at West Newton. So when we are able to kick off, it will be an exciting program. And as I said, will help unlock the value inherent in the project.
Marvellous stuff. And just going to, in the RNSC, you talk about a £5 million discretionary cash facility. How does that work? What's that going to be used for then, Sachin?
Yeah, so to stress in the first instance that Rehoboth believes we are fully funded for the entire work program, including the acquisition of this incremental 16.665% and the work program associated with it, the main part of it, as we discussed, being the drilling of the B-wells. However, just given how uncertain the economic climate is and how uncertain capital markets are, I think it was prudent to ensure that we had sufficient liquidity should any unforeseen circumstances arise so that we can execute the program in a timely manner. And the ability to draw down on this facility is solely at the discretion of the company. And for these reasons, we thought it was a highly attractive thing to put in place alongside this acquisition to ensure the financial robustness of the company over the course of this very exciting program. I think many of your listeners will have been part of or associated or invested in companies that did have exciting work programs, that do have extremely interesting projects, but just the financial inflexibility meant that they were not able to move those forward or had to dilute themselves at extremely unattractive values. And for these reasons, we just thought it would be prudent to avoid that situation in order to preserve and retain that value for our shareholders.
Yeah, absolutely. And SPLC, one of the many companies at the moment just taking those prudent steps just in case. Because, like I said, we don't know. There's so much unknown about this virus now. We could have another flare-up, and who knows, and we could lock down again. So it's it's very prudent steps. Excellent stuff. Okay, Sachin, as always, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing here, progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please?
Certainly, Justin, and we discuss the three reasons regularly when we do have these podcasts, but I'll just resequence the order this time round in relation to the activity that we've carried out. So the first thing is, as you pointed out at the start, despite the fact that we've had lockdown, the company has not been sitting on its hands. It has used the availability of what the market has thrown up to enhance its position in very exciting projects. And we will continue to look at that sort of opportunity set now and going forward. The second thing is that we are funded for this extremely exciting work program, not only at West Newton, but also in Romania and in California. So it's a level of on-the-ground activity that we can look forward to over the course of this year and going into next year as well. And then the final point just goes back to this idea of economic robustness of the projects. The thing that's holding us up as a company in terms of activity isn't the oil price scenario. It really is the COVID scenario. And the reason I highlight that is because it plays to the strength of our strategy, which is to invest in economically robust projects. And I hope that the confidence that we are displaying in moving these projects forward is a reflection of how strong they are in any realistic scenario of oil and gas prices. And for those three reasons, Justin, we think it would be sensible for your listeners who are not following us to follow us, and why we think we are a very sound investment.
Excellent stuff. It's good to chat to you as always, Sachin, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Clark, CEO at Gfinity. G-F-I-N is the ticker there. John, thanks for joining me.
Pleased to be here.
Now, since you come on board as CEO, I see you evolving the business and pivoting towards what's working. And you've announced today creation of Gfinity Digital Media and a new commerce and rewards program initiatives. And we'll dig into that. Just quickly, though, but again, John, for people not familiar, Gfinity, just explain it. What it's all about, please.
Yeah, Gfinity is the world-leading virtual esports and competitive gaming company. And from today, as you mentioned, we also have a digital media group. So we work with a number of the largest and biggest brands in the world, from all through the game publishers right the way through to sports rights holders like Formula One and Premier League, and big brands like Amazon.
Yeah, absolutely. And last week, you had a multi-year agreement with the Formula One, a big move with your community. How does that fit in with the strategy?
Yeah, F1 was a massive announcement for us last week. It's the single biggest contract in our history and plays into one of our business's sweet spots, which is virtual motorsport. And it fits when we look at our business, we've got three strategic pillars, and it fits into the first pillar of providing tournaments for a fee, which is something we also do for the Premier League. But providing service for a fee is not all that we do at Gfinity. A second pillar is growing our own community and monetizing it. Now, our own community, as it says, it's ours. It's valuable. We have 100% ownership of the revenue we're able to drive from it. And that's why we launched the digital media group today, to be able to maximize that opportunity. And the third strategic pillar is really our platform as a service. So utilizing our technology and our tournament platform and content creation skills to help build communities for others, and doing that ideally as part of a JV, so which means that we share in the commercial upside that we create and generate, the value that we're creating for other people.
Yeah, I mean, you say there's a service there, of course. When you're providing a service to someone, there's only a certain amount of days in the year or events that they can do that for. So it's a certain amount of limitations. But now you're growing your own community. So can you explain about, there's a potential to earn, 24 hours a day. So can you explain more about the fast growth of that community, please?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and I think it's important to say that to reinforce the point that you just made there. You know, we as a business. And it was very clear coming on board as the CEO that our business, we need to have multiple revenue streams, and service provision for some of the biggest brands in the world is good, and we love it, and we deliver it well. But we also need to make sure that we've got other revenue streams, and in some areas, sort of create annuity type business. And so when we look at the growth of our fast growth of our community, we've created specialist web titles focused on the hard to reach and significant. It's actually a massive gamer market out there. So we know a lot about this audience because we are this audience. And so supporting that is a talented team of SEO specialists that have been able to build our authority on Google, which drives many, many benefits. And that's driven over 10 million plus users to our sites and 31 million impressions through our other social channels on TikTok and Facebook and Instagram. So now that we've got scale in that area, we can start to monetize. And when you look at it, 2020 is a massive year for the gaming industry because of the launch of new consoles with PlayStation and Xbox in Q4 this year. But also with that comes multiple new games and peripherals. So interest levels are high. And I think what's happened with the lockdown, this turbocharged the level of interest. And gamers are choosing to visit these Gfinity specialist sites time and again, and that creates opportunity for us.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got that. You've got this community's big potential audience. How do you monetize them, and what type of revenue can you expect? Driving from that, then.
Yeah, the Gfinity Digital Media Group been created to monetize our community, and that's really why we've taken our internal resources and built them into some smart partners that we're working with to help us do it. Because young, hard-to-reach gamers are on every brand's wish list, and they're spending, and this audience is spending more time on our sites. And so we've got three basic monetization levers that we're operating within our community. First is the CPM model, which is site takeovers and programmatic ads. The second is e-commerce, and that's really a CPA model. And thirdly is selling our community building skills to help others grow their audience and, as they take a share in that. So e-commerce is a massive massive opportunity, and one which we are now sort of pushing into. 90% of all purchase decisions start online, and at some point they go through Google. And so the good news for us is in all things gaming, Gfinity is already an authority on Google. So Stealth Optional, our gamer tech site, is well positioned because of the interest in consoles, games and peripherals to be able to have one click, and then from there you can go and buy. And because of that, it's already an authority on Google, and because there is a growing interest and significant interest in what's coming out later on in the year, the numbers that are for the users that are coming to Stealth Optional is just growing by the day. So in relation to how much revenue, I think I'm on record as saying that we'll deliver 2 million in revenue in the full year 2021 from our community. I believe that's a conservative estimate.
Yeah, and then you've got all this, like you say, you get the ads and all that stuff. And how do you intend to sort of deepen the engagement with the visitors in your sites? And are you going to add more, get more engagement?
Yeah, I think what we've experienced is massive growth in the number of users. With also sort of significant number, if you look at page views, over 40, 45, 50 million page views. But really, the number of users is important. And the fact that that's gone up to over 10 million, that means that we've got an opportunity to move from sort of reach to deeper engagement. So that's what we announced today with Gfinity Plus, That will go live in a couple of weeks' time. And that's really all about engagement. And so using our tech IP that that we've developed and company owned, that allows chat forums, exclusive content, gamification. And ultimately, it gives us people the opportunity to, when you come in, come onto our sites to stay longer and to play, and to play sort of social-based tournaments. So matching against people of your own, of your own level, playing specific games that we have relationships with publishers that may want to utilize our site to be able to give the opportunity to people to go deeper into their games and learn more about them. So that's really what we're trying to ultimately deliver, the type of content experience that we know gamers are looking for and what they expect from us.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there any kind of company that you're sort of modelling your digital media business on then, John? Is just...
Well, I think what we try to do, we look to other companies for inspiration. And I think one that's is an inspiration to lots of people is Future PLC. You know, it's got specialist titles, and I love their mantra, which is entertain, engage, and inform through great content. But they also have a position which is about a valuable audience, is one that has intent behind content that it views, you know, helping people to achieve an objective. And I think that's what we see with Gfinity. We've got a large and highly engaged gamer audience that come to our sites. They want to be entertained. They want to learn. They want to get better. And, you know, no matter what level of competition they are or competitive skill, you know, playing against your mates on a Friday or Saturday on a weekend gaming, you like to win, and you like to. So we see people learning more and coming to sort of understand how to get better at their games. So I think what will happen for us, we've built credibility, we've got domain strength, we've got great SEO team that really understand that, and we do great content. So in gaming, we're already a market leader. Where we choose to play, so we're a lot smaller than Future PLC, but we do have ambition.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to look at their results now. I mean, they're just over £1 billion market cap, and their half-year results are very impressive. You know, double-digit adjusted operating profit up 77%, operating profit 147%. So they're growing very quickly. So that's not a bad company to model yourself on, I think, is it?
Oh, exactly. And I think if you look at the value of their digital audience and do the math and compare that to sort of the value of our audience, I think you'll see that our audience is in a very focused area of gaming is significantly undervalued.
Marvellous stuff. Well, John, as always, if you could, three reasons. If someone's listening right now and likes the sound of what you're doing here, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, my favourite part of the interview. Firstly, Gfinity has got momentum. Secondly, we're doing a big push into e-commerce in a bumper year for gaming. And thirdly, Gfinity is undervalued and growing.
Marvellous stuff, John. Good to chat to you. Hopefully we catch up very soon. Thanks very much.
Brilliant. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Simon Potter, CEO of Bahamas Petroleum Company. BPC is ticker there. Simon, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. Good morning. Good evening.
Yeah, well, I know you're in Australia, I'm in the UK, and it's tech that's enabled us to get together. And of course, you're still progressing your project, even with COVID-19.
Indeed.
Yes, around. So before we go into this news today, drilling rig contract signed, just give us a brief summary for people not familiar with what you're doing at Bahamas Petroleum, please, Simon.
Okay, Bahamas Petroleum, we're looking to explore the multi-billion barrel potential in the Southern Ocean of the Bahamas. And drilling an exploration well was always going to be key to unlocking that potential. We'd planned to drill in the first half of 2020 with the spudding of our Perseverance well, number one. And that was going to target nearly a billion barrels, 770 million barrel target that was. But it was part of a smaller segment of a larger structure, and that larger structure, the B structure, has the potential to deliver over 2 billion barrels. So certainly we were very excited to pull a plan together to go and drill when, of course, COVID-19 intervened. We were on the cusp of drilling, Justin. We had many of the things that we needed. We'd contracted a rig. And indeed, we were very pleased to contract the services of Halliburton and Baker Hughes. We'd ordered the long lead items, the critical path items. We'd pulled the team together. We'd enacted the drill plan that we'd put together, and the well was going to cost around $25 to $30 million. We'd pulled together a funding strategy, which we'd announced to the market the last September last year, that involved many component parts, an open offer, a placing, and we'd lined up a conditional convertible facility and an unconditional convertible facility. So we had a full funding strategy from a range of different sources. And most importantly, and something we were very pleased and proud about, was we'd have organized the environmental authorization to go drilling in the Bahamas from the Bahamian government. So we'd actually got all of the components ready. We'd got the rig, the team, the funding, and indeed that important environmental authorization, such that we were on the verge of going drilling when, of course, we had to pull up stumps and we had to stand down the team, very disappointed, close the drilling office, and really sort of lick our wounds and retreat to the various places where we were in lockdown around the globe.
Yeah, well, do you know what you say? Everything was going to plan, and then, you know, which doesn't conform to plan, is a pandemic. And of course, people may have seen this coming a while. No one knows when it's going to come. So right in the middle of your, you know, big year, this has happened. But sometimes these things happen, and you know, there's opportunity in crisis. And like you say, now this news today, drill rig contract signed, drill cost estimate significantly reduced, and an update on timing progress towards commencement of exploration drilling. So take us through this new rig contract, if you could, sir.
Yeah, well, we're very fortunate to have signed a drill rig contract with Stena Drilling. It's unconditional, so it moves forward. We've established a timing window. We have to give, obviously, we want to comply with our licenses, which means that we have to go drilling between December and February later this year and early into next year. And that's compliant with our license commitment. Our license commitment was to drill in 2020, but that's been extended by the first force majeure that we've notified the Bahamian government of, which gives us an extension to the license. So we'll remain compliant with that. But as I say, acting decisively to establish the time window when we will go drilling. And in negotiating the rig contract with Stena, we've been able to really negotiate a very attractive cost for us, a rig rate with us that works very well. That means that, roughly speaking, we've got about a 15% reduction in cost on the project. Now, you know, the whole thing revolves around being able to execute the well, and Stena providing us with a sixth generation rig, which is certainly the cutting edge of technology. It includes a managed pressure drilling system, an MPD system, which certainly makes drilling safer and indeed makes it more efficient. Certainly there are various other aspects to the contract. To the extent that Seadrill don't turn up with a rig, there's a penalty clause. And indeed, interestingly, Stena actually have an investment option in the project. They can contribute $10 million, consistent with any capital raising that we do, and or they could take a 10% interest in the project for $10 million. So, interestingly, Stena have that investment option in the project. But importantly for us, it also, as I said, with the certain commercial terms from the contract, it allows us to revisit the duration of the project, the execution of the project, and we've come up with a cost reduction. So the estimated cost of the well is now $21 to $25 million. As I say, a reduction of approximately 15% on that we previously had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And what about the farm-out process? Is that still ongoing?
Yeah, well, the farm-out process, interestingly, notwithstanding the COVID intervention, because of the scale of the project, the farm-in option is still live and active. Interest still remain there. But, Justin, it's really just a part of the overall funding strategy. Mm-hmm. We announced a previous funding strategy last September, which essentially remains in place. And indeed, ironically, after the COVID impact, we'd actually been raising money. And so at the point at which we pulled up stumps, we were quite a good position. We actually have $12 million in the bank, which by the time we actually get round to drilling, we'll probably be closer to nine, but still certainly a large chunk of the estimated cost. And then over and above that, we've pushed back in time our various existing facilities. So the conditional convertible has been pushed back, as has the unconditional convertible. And just as a reminder, that makes cash available to us in tranches through November, December, January, and February later this year and into next year. So a range of different sources seeking to give us the optionality and flexibility. And really, the farming sits in that context. So really now, over the next 6 months, we've got the opportunity to optimize that strategy as we go forward, really moving up to a commencement of or a recommencement of drilling activities come September, October time, ahead of that anticipating drill window between December and February later this year, early next year.
Yeah, well, it must have been gutting when, you know, everything went to lockdown and you're in the middle of this transformative year. But now your spirits must be lifted a bit by this.
Oh, for sure. Obviously, you know, every cloud and silver linings. The opportunity to renegotiate the rig contract has been fundamental. Terms are improving with the rig market out there, and certainly leaving us with cash in the bank left us in a very strong position. But yeah. You know, we called the world Perseverance for a reason, and that was last March. So it's even more appropriate now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the team is still together. We're ready, energized to get going again. And we look forward to that time. But this rig contract signing, acting decisively, is a key step in establishing both the cost estimate and indeed the time frame.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, Simon, well, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of the progress you're making here but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, we've got a fixed timeline. As I said, acting decisively, we've established that timeline. We'll be drilling between, it's called commencing, sometime between the end of December and February next year. So a fixed timeline. Track record. There's probably a lot of people out there who sort of listen to us saying what we were going to do last September and thinking, oh, well, maybe you will, maybe you won't. But do you know what? We said what we were going to do and then we went and did it. And now we're going to do that again. We are laying out for investors, shareholders alike, the plan, the time plan, and we're going to go out and do that again. So track record. And then thirdly, the scale of the potential, I stated it right at the start, we're drilling an overall structure that has the potential to be 2 billion barrels. The target that we're targeting is 700 million barrels. So huge, huge potential. So we fixed the timeline. We're going to actually go and execute what we say we're going to do, and then the scale.
Excellent stuff. Simon, it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Cheers then, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. I was going to say founder, but I suppose you are the founder. You are the founder of the Trader Book. You found it, and I suppose...
I did. I laid the foundation stone on the Crypto Trader Book.
Yeah, and other people can find it in all good bookstores or online. I suppose most people do online these days. Are bookstores open yet? I mean, I know we get... Non-essential shops will be open on the 1st of June. That's when you can go in and non-essentially buy, I would say, that was essential reading. So maybe there's an argument for a bookstore to say, we should open up because most of our books are essential reading. If someone wants to trade cryptocurrencies, they've got to get Glenn Goodman's book, The Crypto Trader. It's essential reading. Let's open up the shop, everyone. The shop should be open. We are an essential... And I suppose, you know what, I love reading, so...
Should sell it in the grocery stores next to the hand sanitizer and the toilet paper throughout the entire crisis is where my book should have been.
Yeah, it should be all PPE equipment and Glenn Goodman's book. Right next to it. That'd be odd placement, wasn't it? Just all the stuff, protective stuff, and then
protection from financial ruin. Yeah. Very important.
Cool. So we're talking at the moment. The markets are rallying after the bank holiday weekend, and I had someone say to me, "The market's lost its marbles." And that's what someone just said to me. I thought the market itself can't be crazy, can it? Only the participants, I suppose. You know, you can't say this market. I was going to say this rally is silly. But you can't say a rally is silly, because a rally is a rally. It's got no emotions.
I can make a good argument that it is silly, the rally itself.
The rally itself, yeah, no, but, you know, the rally is not wearing a silly hat and, you know, blowing whistles and like a clown. It's doing what the people take part in do. So,
but who are those people? That's what I want to address. And you've got
the Fed, isn't it?
Well, no. But what's interesting is the kind of people who are buying and selling. We're getting a lot more data now coming through about what the institutions are doing and what retail traders are doing. And what's really fascinating about this massive rally, and indeed very worrying, is that the big institutions and the mutual funds in America and so on have been pretty much sitting on their hands. They've still got a lot of spare cash, and they're waiting for, I guess, another low in order to or even a fully fledged bear market before they start buying. So the institutions have not been hugely involved in this enormous rally, but who has? The retail traders. There's been a massive, massive rise in the number of people using Robinhood, for example, one of the new discount brokerages in the United States that is becoming extremely popular with retail traders. They do commission-free trading, which has drawn a lot of people in. We've got a few equivalents in the UK and Europe that are also anecdotally doing well. But as I say, for the States, we've actually got figures on this. We know that some of these major brokerages have seen their trading volumes go up several hundred percent over the past couple of months.
Well, sure,
and retail traders is new traders in a lot of cases as well, like people who've never traded before, because they got a lot of time on their hands. They're sitting at home,
now it's time
to do this.
Trading volumes have gone through the roof, but ironically, it's called Robin Hood, who robbed from the rich, gave to the poor. This should be anti-Robin Hood. It's taken away from the poor and the private investor. And essentially, I've said this a while back, that essentially, until people believe this is a bull market again, we won't sell off. And so you've got to have a lot of people invested. And what you get in this FOMO, fear of missing out. I did last week the stock. I jumped into stock that I thought would do well. I still think it'll do well, but I shouldn't have bought. It was at high. I shouldn't have bought there. But it's only one tranche of, I normally buy in thirds. So it's one third. But I sort of give away to FOMO. And this is the experience I've got. When the market's rally, I just want to buy more of the stocks I hold. I thought, no, but I'm going to sit by my hands. No, I'm not. The guy, Mark, who said to me, he said, he's probably listening to a lot of the podcasts. He said, this market has lost its marbles. I said, yeah, it's a relief rally, you know. Still think the financial fallout hasn't started yet. The patient is still hooked up to the machines. When the machines come off, and he has to walk around and function on his own, we'll see how healthy he is. And that's my feeling of, the economy.
Yes, good analogy.
We're not going to see, we haven't had the results from any of these companies yet. And I think even after we get initial set of bad results, which will keep happening from companies reporting for months on end, you'll then get low demand anyway, because most of these companies are not fully open. They are open, so you get bad results from obviously the last quarter, which they haven't been open, and the ones that are open back up will not get much demand. So it's going to be a long, drawn out. I just think the rest of this year, I can't see many companies. Okay, you get the online stocks, so Amazon's doing well, but the majority of companies, I think, will be doing badly. So that's what it'll come down to. How can you value a company when this year's figures are half as good as last year's? It shouldn't be at the same price as they were last year, should they, really?
No, I agree with you. And that is why the institutions are mainly staying out of this, because they refuse to get involved in something that they see as completely irrational. I mean, the last thing that, important, well-paid fund managers want to do is to be seen rushing into, the latest fad, because, frankly, buying stocks has, as we've seen from these retail brokerages, buying stocks has become the latest fad, as it does every decade or so. every decade or so, retail traders get involved in a big way in buying stocks, whether it was the dot-com boom. That was probably one of the biggest ones for retail traders. Also, we had in this country, we had an FX boom just over a decade ago. You remember when everyone started getting into spread betting FX?
Yeah.
Suddenly every Tom, Dick and Harry was an expert in trading foreign currency, which is one of the most difficult things to do, in my experience. You know, one of the hardest things to kind of get your head around and become truly profitable at, because it's a zero-sum game, of course, unlike stocks, which generally at least go up in the very long run. And so, retail traders getting involved to such a large degree is a pretty bad sign, I think, for the stock market. It usually marks that you're close to a boom. It's all getting very frothy. And if the institutions are selling, if they're doing the distribution, that is the classic end of a cycle. They're selling to the mugs, in inverted commas, the retail traders. That's what they call them behind their backs. They call the institutions, a lot of the fund managers will call these people mugs. And it's not good. It doesn't augur well. I've got one more thing to point out about this as well, another piece of evidence, which I tweeted earlier on last week, or I retweeted rather. It was a nice graph that somebody put up, a chief investment strategist at Schwab, one of the big US brokerages. A lovely chart showing the correlation between the S&P 500 and the S&P 500 forward-looking earnings per share. And what you see is that over time, over the past 20 years or so, whenever earnings per share looking forward are rising, generally the stock market rises as well. And when earnings per share is falling, then the stock market falls. I mean, this is hardly an enormous revelation. It's kind of fundamental analysis 101, I guess. But here's the fascinating thing. If you look at this chart, and if you go to my tweets, then you'll see what I'm talking about. It was about a week ago I tweeted it. You've got a picture of what's happening now. And what's happening now is forward-looking earnings per share is plummeting while the stock market is rocketing. And that is extremely unusual. That does not usually happen. And it shows that we're really, really out of kilter, that prices on the US stock market, at least, and let's face it, every other stock market, are way out of kilter with the earnings per share that we expect from companies over the next year or so.
Yeah,
they're heading in opposite directions.
When you said Schwab, I knew it was going to be Lizanne Saunders. She tweets out some really good graphics, doesn't she?
Yeah,
and I'm a follower of hers as well. Worth following, definitely. It is quite. Do you know what? It's a matter of time. The thing is, we look at the market every day, And like I said, what's a good example analogy is getting a chart and then looking out on a daily. I mean, some traders obviously look on minutes and 5 minute frames or whatever. I don't know. Generally, look on daily is my default. But if you literally scroll out a little bit and look to the week, it really takes the big bumps out of it, what seems like a big bump, insignificant of the long term. But as I said, we are looking at daily machinations of this. It's rallying now, but I genuinely think, this will, and I did a chart a while back, like I said, of the financial fallout, and I think we'll go down now. Once we have the worries about the economy, the lockdown lifted, right, that's off our mind. We'll have that relief rally, but the realisation hasn't set in, the financial fallout hasn't set in, hasn't started. And we're going to have months of it. And I just think the news, the bad news, the real financial bad news will be overwhelming. And even though the Fed has now pumped in $7 trillion, or their balance sheet is $7 trillion, they've doubled it, more than doubled it in the last few months. They can't keep doing that. They can't keep, I don't know, they've got a lot more to go. Don't fight the Fed, they say, but how long can they keep doing that for? They can't keep doing it forever,
Forever?
Maybe they can. Yeah, but they can't stimulate demand. I mean, let's say, for example, if you're a company...
Well, they can stimulate demand by sending checks with real money out to human beings, as they have been doing, in America. They send out thousands and thousands of dollars free post.
No, $1,000, most of those people are...
But they're thinking about doing more now. And,
no, but
and
how long can you keep doing that for?
People can buy shares with it, like
no,
they have
No,
been.
They don't, though. In the end, what happens is, it's like negative interest rates, People think it's going to stimulate the economy. It doesn't generally. What people do is borrow money to get paid for and hoard it because they're so scared because we've never been in this situation again. that it makes situations worse. People just borrowing money, they're getting paid to borrow money, they put it under their mattress. Because, you know, they're just thinking that's the only real thing around that most people can have is a bit of cash. And that's what we saw the Dash for Cash happening. People are so scared, you know, people sold everything in the stock market. And so I think...
But that's partly what's fueling the retail trader boom in America, is that because it is now a joke putting your money in the bank, the amount of interest you get. I've certainly been getting, you know, messages from random punters complaining to me, and people I know as well, just friends who've never been into trading, just saying, well, you know, I'm 60 years old, I've got all this money, and there's no point just keeping it in a bank account now because it's earning virtually nothing. So they're desperately looking around. Okay, so some of them might just, you know, keep it in the bank anyway because it's effectively the same as keeping it under your mattress if you're barely earning any interest. But a lot of them are looking for higher yield, and so they're thinking, well, look at the stock market, it's going up and up, why don't we get ourselves a slice of that? And the fact is, as we know from previous booms, Justin, it could go a lot higher. You know, things can go a lot, get seriously irrational before they finally pop. The one thing we do know is a certainty is the pop, because it always happens every single time. But before the pop, people like you and me, who are more circumspect about these things, can get extremely uncomfortable as it just goes higher and higher. And we could, you know, we might be sitting here every week for the next several months just saying to each other, I can't believe this. This is ridiculous. It's even more ridiculous than it was last week.
Yeah. And, and the thing is, like that, I'm a third invested pretty much, you know, two thirds in cash. But as the stocks go up, that cash percentage position, you know, decreases and stocks go up. So, but even now, I'm starting to think I'm overly invested on that third. I'm going to start putting stop losses in. So I'm thinking, no, even looking at, I've got about three big companies that I invest in. One is Barrett, one is Auto Trader, and one is Greggs. Auto Trader's rallying like crazy. Greggs is now starting to do okay-ish. And I'm thinking, right now, this level even, where Greggs are at, let's look at Greggs. They're at, let me just get the chart up there. They're at £18. They're up 6% today. This is like a, you know, a big company, a £1 billion company. They're up 6.6% today at about 18.26. Now, the highest they've ever been is like 25 quid. And I'm thinking, you got to look at rather than look at the price, look at value. Thinking, I don't think Greggs is going to earn 50%, if I'm being conservative, 50% of what they earned last year, because by the time they get back full and running, you know, they've had a quarter out pretty much from doing nothing. By the time they get, you know, back to normal, they probably earn half what they earned last year. And they earned about £108 million pre-tax profit last year. So you've got to value it pretty much from £50 million. And then you've got to get to the next year, will they be doing it again next year? It's a blend of that. So at the moment, I think they're not cheap, really. But how many years in advance are we looking? So I'm thinking, right, okay, if I look 3 years on the line, maybe they are cheap right now. Maybe I need to buy them right now. But I'm not going to buy them now after a 6% rally, you know, and it's rallied for the last 5 days. Just not. It's not the right time. And, you know, there'll be better. This will be a volatile market. I just think it was a stock picker's market. I look at indices too much because I never buy or sell the indices anyway. So I should look at individual stocks where I do. But I should always say, don't look at the price, look at the value. And I'm thinking, is this cheap right here? Am I getting a good deal? If it's rallied too much, as always, just wait. It'll be a volatile market. There will be days that'll come in the next 6 months where we have those big down days, you know, where some big company will throw up a surprise and then we'll have some kind of worry happening. And we will have those big down days when there'll be better opportunities to buy. Right now, fear of missing out is kicking in. That's when we should sit in our hands, you know, really should. And like you say, until more people are invested, I think, until all the retail mugs are invested, we want to sell off. But we can't be far away, because the more it rallies, the more FOMO you get, the more people jumping at the wrong time. So, and then all of a sudden, they realise they bought the wrong time. Once we have a sell-off, they start selling straight away. And that, you know, other sort of stop losses kick in then, and they start stumbling. So, I'm just trying to sit in my hands, because I just don't want to get involved in it, you know?
I know, I'm trying to do the same. So I've been concentrating more on commodities in order to try and just avoid having to make a decision about the stock market, because as you say, it's just too unpredictable. It's impossible to know whether it's going to just carry on rallying for ages or it's going to just crash 30% or 50%. I mean, you know, in a situation like this where the world economy is in such dire straits and you've got ridiculously high US unemployment, there is at least, anybody has to admit, there is at least the potential for the market to crash crash as much as 50%. It's absolutely not out of the realms of possibility. And if that happens, I don't want to be there heavily invested in stocks at the time that that happened. You may remember at the beginning of the year, I took out, I had lots of stocks, but I took out insurance effectively against the stock market crashing, so that when it did suddenly crash, I was covered. And that is something that I've considered doing this time. But instead, I'm doing what you're doing. I'm lightly invested, but I'm mainly sitting on my hands. So meanwhile, commodities, I bought oil about a week or so ago. Was it a week ago? 18th. Yeah, about just over a week ago, because there was a nice breakout on the charts for the price of oil. You remember it, you know, it crashed to unprecedentedly low negative figures, which made the headlines. What was it? Minus $40 a barrel or something. Yeah. And then after it had recovered, it formed my favorite pattern, the inverse head and shoulders, which is a lovely kind of bottoming pattern. And it formed so neatly that I just thought, I got to buy this oil if it breaks out. It did break out. I bought it and I've made lots of money on that. So I've managed to make money while avoiding the stock market. So that was good. I haven't had much luck, though, with gold, because like many of your listeners, I'm slightly obsessed with the idea that if Fed money printing causes, you know, some kind of high inflation or even hyperinflation at some point, then things like gold and Bitcoin are going to benefit. Now, that's a nice sort of theory. It makes a lot of sense logically, but the problem with these kind of things is always timing, isn't it? And at the moment, I think a lot of people like me are trying to maybe get in too early. We're trying to jump the gun here. There is no sign of inflation or hyperinflation. So why on earth do we expect the price of gold to rocket? I don't know, but I kept trying to buy it and then I'd get stopped out because I'd have a nice tight stop loss to only give myself a very, very small loss. And then I'd get in again and I'd get stopped out. So I've lost bits of money over and over again trying to get in on gold. And if you look at the price over the past few weeks, it's pretty much going nowhere. But the long-term trend over a period of years still seems to be resolutely upward. So I'm still thinking I'll probably try again to try and get into gold, but I'll be waiting for a nice breakout from a decent setup pattern before I give it another go. Meanwhile, silver and platinum have been doing extremely well. Though from silver, it's coming from a very, very low base. Let's not forget that. So even though it's risen a huge amount in the past couple of weeks, silver is still in a very long-term downtrend. If you look at it on a, you know, on a graph that shows like the last 10 years or so, silver still looks, the rise in silver looks like a tiny blip on that graph. It looks like we're still in a downtrend, and yet it is rising significantly now. So it's a difficult one to call silver, frankly, because as I say, in the short term it's going up strongly, but in the longer term it's still got a tide moving against it. So I'm not sure what to do about silver. I've been concentrating on gold, which as it turns out was a mistake.
Yeah, and considering you've written a book called The Crypto Trader, you've not mentioned Bitcoin a lot.
Bitcoin. The reason I haven't mentioned it a lot is because you'll remember last week I was waiting for, it was right poised on that breakout level, right at the resistance line of its long-term trading range. And if it had broken out of that, that would have been massive as far as I was concerned, and I would have bought, and you know, the sky would have been the limit. And I'm talking the past tense because it didn't happen. Instead, the price didn't break out. It tried over and over again to break through that resistance line, kept testing that same line, fail, and eventually, as always happens with these things, once it's failed a certain number of times, the buyers kind of give up and the short sellers win the day, and so they push the price down. Not down an enormous amount, only about 10%, which is peanuts for Bitcoin. So it's still within spitting distance of that all-important breakout line. But, you know, it's allowed me to stand down and relax, whereas I had been, you know, poised over my keyboard. Now I'm just kind of a little bit relaxed. It's down at just under $9,000. The breakout level is around about $10,000-ish. So I've got a bit of breathing space there, and it makes me less interested in Bitcoin. You know, I trade what I'm going to make money on. I'm not going to stare at Bitcoin all day if I can't make money on it right now.
Yeah, no, that's it. Yes. Yeah, do you know what, though? My thought at the moment is that I'm going to have nine stocks. That's exactly it. I've got a fund as well. Nine stocks,
Yeah.
And I'm trying to concentrate on buying them. I've researched them. And I can still go hunting for other stocks. You can do that all the time. But do you know what? I think I can make as much money by topping up or selling a few at the highs in those stocks. Just trading around the stocks, holding a core amount, but upping and downing my holding because you know they've got plenty of potential in them. Sometimes we spend too much time, don't we, looking at other things. Like all you need is half a dozen ideas, you know, different ideas. Like you said, oil, maybe a couple of commodities, all that, maybe indices, and just keep it at that because there'll be an opportunity within those half a dozen. Always, you know, plenty. Sometimes we spread our attention too thinly. You know, we look at too many different options. You know, we look for the next shiny, sparkly thing. When in fact, actual fact, you know, the idea could be with something we've looked at before. You know.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the world of crypto, the latest shiny thing is a crypto that suddenly rocketed, and it's got the rather appropriate, epic, rather appropriate. You know, code of OMG. Oh, OMG. Yeah. The actual name is somewhat longer, but if you go to if you look up OMG/USD on your charting website, then you'll see what I mean. basically, it's rocketed over the past few weeks. About 2 weeks, it's 860, it almost tripled. Yeah, no, it did triple in value. It's come down a little bit since then, but actually not as much as I would have expected. It hasn't crashed again. You know, with these penny stocks, you often get penny cryptos effectively that do exactly the same thing, where sometimes they'll have a pump and dump where somebody like pushes the price way up, and then just as the retail traders are buying in at the top, then the insiders sell and the price gets hammered and shoots all the way back down to where it did before. I'm sure you've seen that happen with oil and gas penny stocks lots and lots of times, as I have. But this one, OMG, it hasn't actually crashed. It's done the going up thing and it's had a bit of a correction, but it hasn't actually crashed, which makes me think maybe there's something in this. Maybe this is genuine rather than just a pump and dump.
No. Right.
Okay, it was just a theory.
It's up to you. You can have a dabble with it if you want, but is it anything behind any of these crypto stocks? Just be honest. Even Bitcoin, you got to, you know, the fact that it's existed for most of the time, that's about it, really. But beyond that, who knows? Marvel stuff. Glenn, listen, we'll speak you next week.
Okay,
it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Market in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Westminster Group, up 15% to 10.25. At 4, Open Orphan, up 9% to 15.6. At 3, Tiziana Life Sciences, up 18.23% to 11.350. At 2, Aston Martin Lagonda, and they're up 32% today to 46.9 pence. And at 1, it's Melody VR Group. MVR, of course, that was EVRH, changed its name today. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, it's Vast BP Project Update, Vast Resources, of course. Not moving at the moment there. At four, scroll down here, it's Investment in Southern Gold from Metal Tiger again. No name on the RNS. Well, 1.875 pence, so 5.6% up for those guys there. At three, it is Modern Water. Sichuan China orders for 400,000 water units down 4.8% to 1.95. At two, it is Fast Forward Innovations, Invested Company Update, EMAC Life Sciences, up 1.6% to 6.25. And the most liked RNS is from Asia Met Resources, and it's the corporate update from them, up 28.3%. And that's, of course, news at Arternium, a group in the Far East there with deep pockets. They've done the due diligence. They've acquired 19.9% holding in Asia Met, and they could be going for full acquisition of the KSK contract of work. So they're in discussion with them right there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.